You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. As always, the Hall of Famer, Mr. Chris Carter, Mr. Nick Wright, right over here. Big show today, basketball, football, and then more basketball, a little more football. Kobe has more advice for LeBron James. Wait till you hear what he had to say. Al Bell went off on the Pittsburgh Steelers, his former team. We're going to start, though, with quarterback Dwayne Haskins. Team's got a front row seat to watch the Ohio State quarterback throw yesterday, and Haskins shined in his pro day. He is the presumptive number two quarterback in this draft, with Kyler Murray seemingly penciled in with Arizona at number one. Despite going perhaps at number two, Haskins is convinced he can fit in anywhere. Take a listen.
You put me in any playbook, I'll make it work. So be able to just show off-platform throws, moving to my left, moving to my right, being able to move off spot and then still be accurate. So that I wanted to show, because during the season I had a couple throws that I missed that I still remember and I worked on all offseason. So I definitely felt like I did a good job with that.
All right, CeCe, you've been following Dwayne Haskins for a long time. What sets this kid apart as a top NFL prospect?
Well, right from the beginning, when you see him throw the football, you know that he's special. He just has a tremendous arm. He can throw with different velocity on the football. So that's the first thing. Besides his size being the prototype size, at 6'3", 230 pounds, this is the size quarterback and the arm strength quarterback that's been successful in the NFL for the last 30 years. Now, my own personal intel, and even talking to Ryan Day, the head coach at Ohio State yesterday, because what people might be missing out on him is his overall leadership, because he doesn't look like some of dynamic leaders, and he hadn't been around a whole bunch, so people don't know. But at Ohio State, filling in for JT Barrett when he was a redshirt freshman, especially in that Michigan game, you could see where he started to grow into being a leader. And one thing that Ryan Day pointed out, that this year in taking over, when they had a lot of controversial things, they started the season.
Yeah.
Urban Meyer was suspended, not on the sideline. Ryan Day was trying to, the first time that he was the offensive coordinator at Ohio State, and Haskins, his first season as a starter. So taking over that leadership of JT Barrett outside of his own physical gifts, those are the things that Ryan Day communicated to me, that he believes that people will be shocked by his overall football IQ, how he understands football concepts, understands defenses, what they're trying to do. Because before Ryan Day came to Ohio State, and he's been there the last 2 years, he was in the NFL for 2 years. And a lot of those concepts he was able to go over with Haskins even more in depth than he was able to go with JT Barrett, a four-year starter and the captain, three-time captain there at Ohio State. So the intangibles as far as the game, his knowledge and understanding what the defense is trying to do, what this pass play means, the different levels of throwing, short, intermediate, and deep. Those are the things that he pointed out to me, that only knowing the kid and teaching him football that you're going to understand
and
that.
And credit to Haskins and the people around him that set him up for this pro day, because I think if you watched it, it was very smart the way he went about it. Much like Kyler Murray threw every throw at his pro day from the pocket, not on the move, because we knew he could throw on the move. You wanted to see him in the pocket. Haskins did the opposite of that. For the same reason, we know he can throw in the pocket. We know he can throw stationary good protection. So he worked on throws on the move. He knew that one of his weaknesses, he mentioned it there, was on the move to his left, which is a weakness for almost any right-handed quarterback. It's not that he's unique there. But he also was precise not only in his throws but in the exact placement. On deep throws, they were going to the outside shoulder where you want them to go. On the red zone throws, they were high and away where if you do miss, it's not going to end in disaster. So he is the prototype. It's one of the reasons why it's been so surprising to me that so much of the discussion has been about the other quarterback. The other quarterback might be more interesting because he's the opposite of the prototype. But big, strong, successful at a major school in a pro-style offense, those are the types of quarterbacks that have gone number one in their draft year after year after year.
Also, the people that trained him, I thought they did a good job as far as showing his footwork. A lot of times when you're young as a quarterback, you don't understand the type of energy that your feet need to have. And that's probably what I took from, because I know he can throw the football. I knew that once people see him in person, they'll be like shocked, like, wow, he throws it with such ease. But does he have the type of powerful footwork in the pocket that guys who aren't great athletes, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and their ability to be able to shuffle their feet and be dynamic that way, which is a different strength that quarterbacks, that people typically don't look for. And younger guys are a little bit lazy in their drop. So you could see that was a point of emphasis as far as his overall footwork and showing people how quick his footwork was in the pocket.
And for his evolution as a passer, see, we were talking about this before the show. You mentioned right now he's an arm and shoulder thrower.
Yes.
And that's what the next step for him will be, not only the footwork in the pocket, but using his base to make him a better
body. It will be able to incorporate his legs into his throw and also using his torso. He's got to do a lot of core strength things because Drew Brees, that's one thing that he taught me as far as being accurate. You got to keep your core strength because you're going to throw the ball from your legs a lot more once you get to the pro level.
And he did look to be in a little better shape than at the combine. Not that he was in bad shape, but I read some of the scouting reports on him yesterday that he has at each phase from the bowl game to the combine to the pro day, each time his body's looked a little bit better.
The other thing Ryan Day said, which was interesting, is you haven't seen a guy look so natural, throws with such ease. Nothing about him seems forced. Why is that important for teams that are looking at him? Does that give you a better sense of what kind of player he might be in the NFL?
Well, the thing, if you can throw the ball, I don't have to change his mechanics. I can go actually to the football. Now, he will tighten up his mechanics. He does have a little loop in his throw that you want to make a little bit tighter. So there's less things that you have to change. Because an NFL offense, it's not going to be as foreign to him as we've seen the other college kids, that it's totally. It's like learning Mandarin for the first time. But if I don't have to work on his footwork, if I don't have to work on his throwing motion, then I can concentrate on the X's and O's and the football part and because there's a part when you turn pro that they're going to knock you down. You lose your confidence. But if I don't have to change my overall fundamentals and how I've learned to do things, it helps me get up to speed with the learning of that offense.
And that alludes to back to what we heard in the soundbite about 6 minutes ago when he was saying, I'm ready for any playbook. If he already has a throwing motion and the fundamentals that he doesn't have to rework, and if the mental part and the X's and O's and the memorization that goes along with being an NFL quarterback, if that's not overwhelming, then he's in a better position to, I don't want to say be instantly successful, but to hit the ground running. He's right. In a better position to where there's no part of it where it's like, man, I'm still working on fixing how I throw the football like right. Lamar has to. Or, man, I can't just, there's only a third of the playbook I'm comfortable with calling in the huddle like we see with a lot of young quarterbacks.
One thing he doesn't have to work on, I think his personality is far more dynamic and will fit into pro football a little more than Kyler. Nothing wrong with being quiet. But when you are a quarterback, you have to have something about you. You have to have a presence about you. And that's what Haskins is, what I've seen in him since he stepped foot on Ohio State's campus. It was evident in his play last year when he threw for 50 touchdowns. And I think NFL teams will see that.
Well, we've now seen pro days from both Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins. And I think you mentioned it is your prototypical quarterback and your new age quarterback. And that's how you're going to differentiate between the two. We'll talk much more about that on the other side. Let's get to some basketball. What advice is Kobe giving LeBron about how to win titles in LA? Next on FS1, you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM or in it. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We'll get to Kobe and LeBron in a second. But first, Jazz Knicks last night. Donovan Mitchell hesitates on the drive. Finishes big, though.
Utah looked good last night. Man, they went after the Knicks early. The Knicks have been playing some of these games where they, you know, they're a little better than their record would indicate. Yeah. Utah was not having it last night in the Garden.
That 5-3-8 in the West is just a logjam, Sergeant.
Out, yeah, man. Mavs and Blazers off the pick and roll. That's D. Lillard finding Yusuf Nurkic for the dunk and then the stare down.
Yeah, he wants you to look back, man. Don't try to hide. Look back and see
look
who did that to
it.
You. Oh. See what car hit you.
Nurkic, one of the bigger, tougher guys in the league. His story. And people
would you say, Nick, look back at it?
Yeah, that's what
okay,
I said.
Okay, I hear
that's
you.
That's what I said.
I hear you, Swaggy, Nick.
The playing game last night. Wow. St. John's, Arizona State.
That's what that means, Jenna.
I got it from the visual. Off the missed lay in ASU's Daquan Lake slamming home the putback.
James Harden's alma mater going to make it to the real NCAA tournament. Arizona State, we get that going tonight. This is a fun game. The better game of the two last night was the ones involving the two 16 seeds. But this was a fun game as well. Watch that while watching a little NBA. Go get it, young fella.
Time now for your Subway Choice moment. LeBron's first season in L.A. is almost over. By everyone's account, it was not a success. The goal now? Do better next year. The question now? How? Kobe Bryant chimed in with some advice, saying, you just got to keep pushing. Seasons like this are what make the championships worth it. Nick, will LeBron ever win a title in L.A.?
If Kevin Durant leaves the Warriors, I think the answer is yes. Ooh. And that makes Kevin Durant as powerful this offseason as any player as we've seen in recent or forever NBA history. If Kevin Durant leaves the Warriors, there will be 10 teams that go into next season, depending on how free agency falls, with legitimate title aspirations. The top half of the playoff teams in the East. We're talking about almost all the playoff teams in the West from this year. We'll see what happens with the Clippers and the Lakers in free agency. But we're talking about a third of the league that will go into next year saying, wait, we got a star. We have a secondary star. We can go do this. If he stays and re-ups, I know we've talked about if Kevin Durant stays, would it just be for 1 year? What if he signs a real full extension with the Golden State Warriors? That, to me, would all do everything but cross a line through LeBron James' championship window. Because while I do think the Warriors, the Lakers, are going to be much better next year, do I think they're going to be better enough next year to reach the gap they currently have with Golden State? I don't. They need Golden State to take a major step backwards, which would mean losing Kevin Durant, and then also, of course, add the star. So
It has to be both.
I don't think that the Lakers, even if they add Anthony Davis, are in position with the coaching staff, and I know that'll change, and with the supporting players, to go in a 7-game series against Durant, Steph, Clay, Draymond, and beat them. So I'm not closing the championship window on LeBron, but Kevin Durant, in an odd way, has more to say about this than just about anybody in basketball.
And I would say also, if Kevin Durant decides to go to New York, my question is, does Kevin Durant win a title before LeBron? Because right now, if I was looking at everything that's been presented, LeBron's whole career, how long he's going to be able to remain in his prime, the Lakers, are they going to be able to not only be able to get one of these big free agents or pull off the trade, but what about all those other important players that you need to be able to add?
Yep.
You know, what type of style are they going to play as LeBron ages? Are they going to be able to put enough defense around LeBron as he ages? Those things I have to depend on? So the answer to the first question is no. I don't think he's going to win a title in Los Angeles. I'm not going to be dependent on Kevin Durant. And I think Kevin Durant, if he goes to New York, he'll win a title before LeBron will, because I believe that someone else will join him in New York. Also, that lottery pick, whoever decides to get that Zion, that will play a role in it. But if it was just based on everything that I've seen, the lack of confidence I have in the Lakers organization to be able to put those key 4 or 5 bench players around LeBron, I would say no, and then I would double down and say I believe Kevin Durant is more lined up to win a championship no matter where he goes and whoever he partners with than LeBron is in L.A.
But he would have to partner with someone. So it would basically be Durant and someone else in New York, LeBron and someone else in L.A., everything else being relatively
but
equal.
It's not like
and the Warriors
two
will still be the favorite.
Right. Well, that's what I was about to say. It's not like those two teams all of a sudden become, well, just pencil in, we're going to go to Lakers-Knicks NBA Finals for the first time in over 40 years. It would be, those would be two of the teams, but then there'd also be Houston and Golden State as most likely the favorite. I think they would be the Vegas favorite, as you mentioned yesterday. Denver's like, is anyone ever ever going to pay attention to us? Portland all of a sudden would see an opening. That's not even to mention OKC. Giannis isn't going anywhere. We're going to talk about Philly. Philly should only be better next year, depending on if they can keep their pending mm-hmm. free agents. Boston could take a major step back, but there's a lot of we don't know because we don't know how free agency is going to fall. But this is where it is such an interesting offseason, because if KD stands pat, then the discussion is the same as it's been going into this year, which is who's the team that could win if something bad happens to the Warriors? If they falter, if they have a bad luck injury timing, something like that. If he leaves, then we're talking about, like you said, wait, what's a bigger draw? LeBron in L.A., KD in New York. Hey, how will the original Warriors look 5 years after the Splash Brothers burst onto the scene? All of that. Now, I do think LeBron is not done being the best player in the world. And I know he's not done being a top five player in the world. But as we've seen, that's not enough right now. He needs another player, and the role players that you're talking about, who do you trust more? Scott Perry and the Knicks, when they have a huge draw in Madison Square Garden. Kobe also said he's added him to the list of players that would have liked to at some point play in Madison Square Garden. NBA guys love the city and love the arena, even though there hasn't been winning here. You trust Scott Perry and the Knicks more, or Magic and Palinka and the Lakers more? You have to trust Scott Perry and the Knicks more as far as filling out a roster. So there's a lot of ifs that go along with LeBron's team being not a championship contender, but a championship favorite. I think they'll be a contender given health almost no matter what next year. But a favorite, a lot of dominoes have to fall into place.
Well, I think it's interesting that you place so much stock on what Kevin Durant does. How big of a drop-off do you think it would be for the Warriors if KD left? You don't think the Warriors would still be the favorites out there if they hold on to Boogie and it's the team you see now and they stay healthy?
I mean, they're going to have a hard time holding on to Boogie. And Kevin Durant is that type of player. Let's just say Kevin Durant stayed and Steph left. They would still be one of the better teams in the league. Let's just say Klay leaves, and it doesn't matter. They are that talented. Now, as far as LeBron's going to have a hill to climb next year to be on All NBA, because Giannis and KD, like, he's going to have to fight for one of them spots. I mean, he's not going to make All NBA this year.
First team.
What else will we be talking about with LeBron? Yeah, he's not going to make first team. All right. Because of those two, and trying to get back on first team, man, that's going to be a tough task. KD is going to be sending a message no matter where he goes, and Giannis will be defending, you know, the MVP from this season. So it's just not a foregone conclusion. Now, Nick might think that way, that he's going to be all NBA and everything. He's top five player.
You can be a top five player. I didn't say it was foregone conclusion, first team All-NBA. You can be a top five player and not be first team.
Okay, well, let's just go with this. Mm-hmm. All right? Steph.
Yep.
Joel Embiid. Giannis. KD.
Yeah, I'm not ready to put Joel Embiid there yet. I'm ready that despite what he did last night, I think we know, and I think you would agree with this, the seven best players in basketball in any order are Steph, KD, Giannis, Harden, Anthony Davis, Kawhi, and LeBron James. Those are your top seven. Joel's trying to get, in my opinion at least,
right,
into
on
that
your
group.
List, but the players that have played the best, all right? Joel Embiid would be in that.
Oh, for this season, right, and it all resets next year. I think we're talking about two separate things. I don't want to get lost in the weeds on that. But we are in agreement that, of course, it's a hill to climb, and as far as Kevin Durant and his ability to remind people on a singular level how great he is, that's one of the attractions of going to New York. He's going to get more shots. He's going to be the featured piece, even if he's with Kyrie. Kevin Durant next year, if he goes to New York, will be one of the preseason favorites for MVP because of that, because he's going to be able to accumulate those counting stats accordingly. But if he stays, then we're having the same conversation we've been having. If he leaves, the Warriors probably are the Vegas favorite. But it's very close. It's Warriors. It's the Rockets. It's Philly. It's Milwaukee. There's a bunch of teams on that list. That's what's so intriguing about this summer.
All right. Let's take a break there. Coming up, Le'Veon Bell sounds off on Ben Roethlisberger. Leave it at that. Next on First Things First. Two-division champ Lamont Peterson takes on Sergey Lipinets in a welterweight showdown. It is Sunday at 6 Eastern, only on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Time now for Say What? 15 seed Abilene Christian will take on 2 seed Kentucky today. An ACU coach, Joe Golding's fashion choice might have fans split down the middle. Say what?
Apparently, I ripped my pants. So I get back to Abilene. I haven't got my bonus yet either. I just found out I don't get that till June 1st, I think. So I heard somebody's going to start a GoFundMe page. I'd appreciate it, you know, any help I can get. But I went. We got one suit place in town. That's it. One suit place. They couldn't get it. They couldn't get it done. I guess you got to alter and do some stuff. So I got one suit, my man. I had two suits when the year started. I left one in the airport. True story. Had to go to when we played Nicholls State and buy a suit or khaki pants and a shirt. I'm coaching tomorrow in my baby blue suit, and I'm gonna have a hole in my butt.
Literally love this man. I love that man because that's about as honest as it'll get.
Coach Cal gotta hook him up, right?
He's got more suits than any
Coach Cal. That's what I'm saying. He's got more suits than any coach in college basketball this side of Jay Wright.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to say Jay Wright also.
You know Coach Cal.
Nick, when I met you, did you have a suit?
Oh, come on, man.
You didn't have a jacket.
No,
hold on.
No, wait a second. Wait a second.
Hold on.
How many suits did you have when I met you?
A ton because of my wife's business. Now, I didn't wear them often, but I had what? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, winter coat. You didn't have a winter coat.
I didn't have a coat. That's correct. No, I didn't have a coat to wear on television, walking anywhere. Chris, one of the first things he did for me. All of a sudden, he comes in, he's like,
I know
like,
you weren't doing
they
wearing a sports coat doing radio.
They got
I don't know if this is the truth.
It's the truth, but you did get me a suit coat, like a winter coat. That is true. I'd never owned one. I appreciate you, see?
All right. You've
been helping me out for years now.
So altruistic. Stories to start your morning now. Dwayne Haskins participated in Ohio State's Pro Day yesterday, projected to be the second quarterback taken in this draft after Kyler Murray. See, where would you like to see Haskins end up?
Man, I believe he's going to be successful no matter where he goes. He can, man, the Giants, you can take him. You cannot scout him and not take him. All right, Dolphins can take him. Because I believe their wide receiving core is a lot better and explosive than the weapons that they have with the Giants. So I like those two destinations. So, Giants, do your homework. All right? You want a quarterback of the future? Born and bred in Jersey. It's hard to do it, man.
He wants to be in New York. It would make sense for him to be a quarterback that doesn't start day one because he had such limited experience. Giants sitting there at six. The Jets have told the whole world that third pick's up for grabs, man. Move up. Make a New York trade. Move up to three. Take Haskins. That's where I'd like to see him. It's where he wants to be and would give the Giants a real plan.
All right, to the NBA now. Good news. James Harden had 57 points last night. Bad news. James Harden still lost. Rockets fell to the Grizzlies in overtime. Nick, despite the loss, how impressive was this game from Harden?
I mean, Harden was simply spectacular. 57, and it's just like, oh, yeah, of course.
Crazy.
I mean, he had 25 in the first half, and I thought when I saw the halftime line, oh, he might get 50. No, how about 57? He hit three free throws to force overtime. Really tough call at the with 0.1 left in overtime that cost the Rockets this game. But, man, every game matters right now. The Rockets, they rested Eric Gordon. They're like, oh, we're playing the Grizzlies. Okay, yeah, half game up now on Portland in the West. So every game matters, but a great job by James Harden.
The most impressive thing, Jenna, was for the last 6 to 8 weeks, everyone was saying, man, can he keep up this pace? People aren't asking that question now. All right, we're in the middle of March, and homeboy rolls in 57.
Yeah.
James Harden, this is one of the most impressive scoring seasons that I have ever seen.
All right, finally, Celtics and Sixers last night. Sixers hadn't beaten Boston yet this season. Jump to the third quarter. That guy right there, Joel Embiid, watch him, gets by Jason Tatum, finishes the N1. He had 37 points, 22 boards on the night. Big energy, getting the crowd involved. Less than a minute to go, tied game. Ben Simmons hits the layup and the foul shot. Down three, now next possession. Kyrie Irving driving, denied by Joel Embiid. Guy loves his defense. Then Jimmy Butler nails the jumper with less than 6 seconds to go. That puts Philly up five. Celtics led by double digits most of the first half in this one, but the Sixers win it. 118-115. Nick, how important was this win for Philadelphia?
Biggest one of the season for the Philadelphia 76ers. Locks up the 3-seed for him, which is critical in the Eastern Conference, gives you a first-round matchup where you will be a heavy favorite, and it guarantees they will not have to play the Boston Celtics in the playoffs unless both teams make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Boston's despite the win last night, Boston is a bad matchup for them. There's a reason that Boston going into this game had won 10 of the last 12, had swept the season series, that Boston presents a lot of problems for them. And if they had lost, they would be in the danger zone. They'd be only two up on Boston. Boston obviously would have the tiebreaker having swept the series. So an enormous win. And the way they won, obviously Embiid was dominant. But how about Jimmy Butler?
7 points through three quarters, and then did what he needs to do. He was their fourth quarter answer with 15 in the fourth. This was a critical win for Philly. They're not going to get to the two line, but now they guarantee themselves they won't fall to the four line. Their best win of the year.
I thought it was important, of course, for the obvious reasons, because of the way Boston has dominated them, but the style for which they're going to play. Joel Embiid talked about it after the game. My goal around here is to score as many points and keep the team in it. Jimmy Butler's going to be our closer. As you saw, the coach, what he did last night was he took the ball out of Ben Simmons' hand as far as running the offense late, put the ball in Jimmy Butler's hand, and allowed him to have that type of quarter. So for me, what I like is you need to have some confidence. You can't say, oh, we're better than them, but Boston keeps beating you.
Right.
But the style for which they went. Joel Embiid was a beast last night. Missed his first free throw, then made 20 free throws in a row. That's why, you know, he's such a special player. But closing it out with Jimmy Butler, if keeping that style, now these last 10 or so games, continuing to work on that, Joel Embiid attacking the first three quarters and Jimmy Butler finishing out. That's why I thought it was important last night for the style for which they got the win.
You mentioned 10 of 12. Sixers beat the Celtics just the fourth time in 25 meetings, to give that a little context. Why does this Celtics team give the Sixers fits like this?
Embiid talked about after the game. Horford does typically guard him well. It wasn't the case last night. Additionally, the Sixers' biggest weakness is their depth, and the Celtics have a lot of depth, and I think the Celtics have a decided coaching edge. But they're not going to have to worry about him again. They're not going to play the Celtics again this year. I don't think Celtics make the Eastern Conference Finals, and that's now the only place they can play each other. So if the Sixers also make the Eastern Conference Finals, for the Celtics, just like I said, this guaranteed the three seed for Philly. This now guarantees the Boston is in that 4-5 matchup, whether the 4 or the 5 against Indiana.
Yeah, it's a tough matchup for them because Boston, with Kyrie on the point, and I'm not here just to bang on Ben Simmons. He's a good defender, but he can't guard Kyrie. So you can't take advantage of the defender that he is because he's going to be on someone else. And you can't hide J.J. Redick. All right, Philadelphia has a weak bench. Boston's a lot deeper than them. And J.J. Redick, he is a mismatch going against anyone. And the Celtics typically like to find him on that offensive end going against him. So that's been one of the big reasons because you can't hide him. And Ben Simmons, when he's guarding against Kyrie, they do so much pick and roll, you can't take advantage. Typically, Ben would be able to negate or slow down all the other point guards in the Eastern Conference. But he can't do that with Kyrie. It's just not a matchup that is favorable for Philadelphia.
Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, we talk so much about teams now getting ready for this playoff push, getting ready to go with the Warriors and whatnot. Mm-hmm. The Sixers last night looked like a team that had the energy, the wherewithal, the right mindset to get ready to head into the playoffs. It seemed more so than the Celtics. The Celtics were dominating in the first
half. Celtics are in trouble. They've been the fifth seed all year long. At some point, people are going to start to believe they're the fourth or fifth best team in the conference. Marcus Morris was one of the best stories of the team up until New Year's Day. He was getting 50% from the field, 45% from three from Marcus Morris. Since then, 40% from the field in the low 30s from three. Was Jaylen Brown play last night? I know he was out there. The box, what did he do? How about Jason Tatum last night having an impact? And Marcus Smart, listen, when Aaron Baines is already hurt, and Marcus Smart's one of their key players.
Yeah, that was a huge storyline.
You can't get yourself kicked out of the game.
Right.
It's a critical
Brad
game
Stevens
for you guys.
Brad Stevens said that afterwards, too. He couldn't have cut
and
himself.
And it wasn't one of those, a guy's going up for a layup, and you foul him too hard, and the refs give you a weak flagrant two. You know you're getting kicked out when you do this. The only question is, will he be suspended? That was enormous because when you were talking about Ben Simmons guarding Kyrie, with Marcus Smart off the court, they don't have a great answer for someone to guard Ben Simmons. Late in the game, Ben Simmons gets the and one to give him the lead. Marcus Smart's mistake was huge, and the Celtics are who they are. They're a good, not great team. Like, that's who they've been all year long. And Kyrie had a lot of points, 12 of 29 from the field, even though he came in fresh because Rozier was playing at the beginning of the fourth. It's a tough loss for Boston.
All right, Sixers avoid the season sweep. They beat the Boston Celtics 118-115. Let's head to the NFL now. Finally got some insight into L. Bell's decision to sign with the Jets. The former Steeler running back sat down with SITV in his first big interview since leaving Pittsburgh and had a lot to say about his time as a Steeler, his rumored weight gain, his money, and, of course, his relationship with Big Ben Roethlisberger.
It's like, it was like Ben, and then like Jim. You know what I'm saying? It's like he's like it's like they all like it seems like they're all on the same level, and everybody else is like lower.
Okay, so it's Ben, the GM, and then all the rest of the players.
In a sense.
Well,
that's the vibe I got. I just feel like if we're teammates, we're teammates. Mm-hmm. We're all the same. We're all the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And you felt like you weren't even with Ben.
Ben is, you know, Ben is Ben. He's the quarterback. At the time, I'm thinking that's how it's supposed to be. He's supposed to be like that. Like, don't get me wrong, quarterbacks are leaders, and yeah, everybody goes to the quarterback. It is what it is. But it's like, it's still, you're still a teammate at the end of the day. You're not, you know what I'm saying? You're not Kevin Colbert.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You're not Mr. Rooney. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
We're still teammates.
Was that a factor why you didn't want to stay in Pittsburgh?
That was part of it. That's part of it. It wasn't the factor, mm-hmm. but it was a factor. Yes, it was a factor.
Your relationship with him.
Yeah, it was a factor.
And you wanted it to be different in a way.
Yes.
How would you have liked it to be different?
I'd have liked it to have been more open, more genuine, mm-hmm. more real, more, you know what I'm saying? Like we're friends, like we teammates.
And you did not feel that way.
No.
Marquise Pouncey defended his quarterback on Instagram, saying, "I've been with Ben going on 10 years. I swear on my kids, he is a true leader. Sucks to see players who leave and are mad at the organization now try and point fingers like they're perfect. But this is the world we live in now." All right, see, there's a lot to take in there. What did you make of Le'Veon's comments?
I thought it was unnecessary. At every NFL office, there's an NFL facility. There's a pecking order. Do you think Edelman and Tom Brady on the same page when Bill Belichick talked to them? Like, you think they're on the same page? We got Trent Brown coming to the show later. You think that the conversations Brady was having with them, you think they was the same as he was having? No, that's the normal way of doing business. In any office or structure, there is a pecking order of doing things. I think that L. Bell, if they had given him the guaranteed money, you know something? He wouldn't be saying that today. So that has a lot to do with it. Now, if you're going to be teammates or close to a guy compared to are we going to be friends, because I had a lot of teammates. I thought they were good teammates. I wasn't trying to be friends with them, you know, as far as socially and everything and be involved in their life. No, that's all extra. Now, there were some guys on the team. Man, we had a group of guys that, man, we did all types of things together. But it's cliques in a locker room. You got five or six different cliques of people hanging out with each other. And for what I know from Ben is close enough to his teammates, but he wasn't close to AB, wasn't close to L. Bell. He wasn't close to them. The offensive lineman, he's closer to him. They're more of his drinking buddies. Yeah. They hang out with them and everything. That's why you saw Pouncey yesterday come to the rescue and be like, no, this guy is, for an offensive lineman, Ben is a good leader. He plays hurt. He's tough. He's smart. Can throw the ball. Man, he can throw the ball at any part of the football field. In the critical moments, third down, fourth quarter, will Ben come through for you? It's been proven year after year. So if he had gotten guaranteed money, yes. Is this structure in Pittsburgh similar to those that I've seen around the NFL? Very, very similar.
And listen, Big Ben's very smart about the teammates that he will and won't criticize publicly. We've spent so much time about his radio interviews, his press conferences. I can't think of a time where he's like, well, what happened on that play is somebody missed a block and I got hit. That's why he never criticizes publicly the offensive linemen. So I think it's smart by him. It's genuine or not. The guys who have the biggest issue with Big Ben on the team seem to be guys that he will publicly criticize and or guys who also want a bigger share of the spotlight. Offensive lineman Stink talks about it all the time with us. They know they aren't going to be starring actors in their movie. They are always going to be supporting or unnamed characters. That's the personality of them. But when you have personality of an Antonio Brown, superstar wide receiver, Le'Veon Bell, superstar running back, I'm sure there is some natural bitterness of Big Ben doesn't share a lot of the glory, gets a disproportionate amount of power within the organization, and why can't we be pals? Is Le'Veon Bell's mindset. There's a lot of, to me, very fair criticisms of Big Ben, a lot of which I've levied on this show. I don't think it's his responsibility to be friends with Le'Veon Bell. I don't think it's his responsibility, by the way, to knock himself down a peg in the organization. If you want to say the organization has elevated him above the coach and that's problematic, they've elevated him above the rest of us and that's problematic, that's an organization complaint. It's not a nobody's in the business of going to bosses and saying, "Hey guys, I think you treat me too well. I think you should. I think I should. My stature should be lessened." So, of the criticisms of Ben Roethlisberger that are fair, I don't know that Le'Veon Bell was listing them right there.
I understand he wants. You don't hear him often come out and speak poorly of or blame or throw any of his offensive linemen under the bus. I get that. But a big part of why Ben Roethlisberger is successful has been over the last couple of years because of Antonio Brown and because of Le'Veon Bell. And if he, as we're hearing the rumors are, he got what he wanted, he got rid of the two guys that he often criticizes, and he got rid of his offensive coordinator from a couple years ago, Todd Haley, all the people that he has spoken out about, now you want to see, okay, Ben, this is the team that you seemingly want. There's no one else that you don't like. There are no other sort of cancers on the team, if you will. Now let's see what you've put together.
I have to correct you there because it's not Ben's decision. Ben didn't decide who was going to get the money. He didn't decide to trade A.B. A.B. demanded a trade. All right. Now, he did criticize the decisions as far as the coaches, but so did Aaron Rodgers. So we've seen quarterbacks and players criticize that. Ben has not selected the roster. Kevin Colbert and them don't go to him and say, "Hey, Ben, how are we going to dish out this money?" So we can't put that responsibility on Ben Roethlisberger. That's not his responsibility.
But was the culture he had created or the buildup, did it come to a head where it was, well, you can either keep Antonio Brown or you
I
can
think
keep
it,
me?
I think that he certainly exacerbated the Antonio Brown situation. I don't think the Le'Veon Bell situation, okay, that was a contract dispute.
Sure.
I think Ben Roethlisberger, now, maybe he didn't help Le'Veon Bell's warm and fuzzy feelings when he said all those good things about James Conner, when he said we're going to be fine. Like I think that's to your point. But the Le'Veon Bell situation was money.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown, I think, could have been solved by money, but it wasn't a price. Money wasn't the initial factor. I think Antonio Brown, the initial factor, was headbutting with he and Big Ben. But I haven't heard Ben Roethlisberger say, and I don't think we will, that he's glad those guys are gone. I think he knows they have helped him do his job. I think where he could have been better was on acknowledging early on, they helped me do my job. Maybe I shouldn't throw Antonio under the bus when I throw a pick to a D lineman.
Right.
Le'Veon Bell has been a great player for us. We want him to come back this year. Maybe I shouldn't publicly say we're going to be fine. We got
Connor.
James Conner. Those types, especially because in that interview, Le'Veon made it clear he didn't really have a great plan, as you were talking about all last year. He didn't know going into it, I'm going to sit out this week or that week, come back here. So maybe some of those comments when he's like, I'm going to come back after week one. Maybe that's one of the reasons he didn't come back as early as he said he thought he was maybe going to and then didn't. Like, there wasn't a lot of logic there.
Yeah, let's not get away from what's Ben's number one responsibility. When he was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers, and we should note this, Pittsburgh Steelers create the culture, all right? Ben Roethlisberger rolled into that culture, all right? Mike Tomlin, Kevin Colbert, they create the culture. We can't blame that on Ben Roethlisberger. Now, Ben, is there a difference between great leadership styles? Yes. But his number one responsibility is to lead the football team, which he did when they were defensive dominated and led them to a Super Bowl. He made sure they didn't blow it. And then after that, Ben led them to the Super Bowl. So your number one responsibility, regardless of what your assignment, is to do your job. And that's to deliver the football to the players who deserve to be able to get the football or the way the coaches have played it. So we can't distort this. We're starting to talk about a lot of different stuff. I can play with Ben Roethlisberger. You know the reason why? Because he's a damn good quarterback. And he's going to deliver the mail where the ball but he needs to be delivered. And I played with a bunch of bad ones. So let's not get that mixed up as we A.B. whining and took himself out of Pittsburgh. L. Bell, because he didn't get the guarantees, he's out of Pittsburgh. That's not Ben Roethlisberger's fault.
It's a fair point. All right, take a break coming up. Much more from Le'Veon's sit-down. That's ahead on First Things First.
Are we at the club?
Welcome back to First Things First. NBA Later. Champ Steven Jackson joins the show. And happy to
Action
be here.
Action Jack wearing his President Obama suit. I like it. Good to see
there's
you, sir.
There's a spring theme on this set, and it's very nice to see.
Everybody's looks nice.
Yes. Bring us all down with my black. LeBron's
you
first
look
season.
Lovely, Jenna.
Thank you. In L.A. is almost over, and by everyone's account, it was not a successful one. So the goal right now, try to do better next year. The question right now, how are we going to do that? Kobe Bryant chimed in with some advice saying, you just got to keep pushing. Seasons like this are what makes championships worth it. All right, Steven, you think LeBron will ever win a title in Los Angeles?
Yeah. I mean, he has a chance to win a title as long as he's playing. I think he's still that good. I mean, Kobe giving him the best advice you can give him. Mm-hmm. You came out, you did what you could. Obviously, the team wasn't the team you wanted it to be going towards the playoffs. So just deal with it. It happens. A lot of players, a lot of top five, top ten players that had seasons where they didn't make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So this is nothing. They know they're going to build this team. They know they're going to bring some players in. Do what you've been doing, LeBron. Have great off seasons. Work your butt off in the summer and be ready for next year.
In your opinion, aside from obviously stay healthy, mm-hmm. what's the biggest thing LeBron should do if you were giving him advice differently next year?
Nothing. This man spends millions of dollars on his body every year. Is nobody in greater shape now? He had a little injury this year, but that's Father Time. This guy's been in the finals, what, seven straight years?
Eight straight years.
So it happens, you know, it happens.
Well, it was also a fluke injury, too.
And it wasn't that serious, you know. It was more of holding him back for the playoff run. So, I mean, do the same thing you've been doing all these years, LeBron. You don't do nothing different. You're still great. You're going to be better next year.
If it was me, I'd give him some suggestions. And number one thing would be his body. I would try to get my weight down as low as possible. As you get older, your joints can't take the type of impact that it's in. So for me, I know he spends a lot of money with this trainer. I would try to come down with an ideal different weight. Because as you get older, you need to play with less weight compared to with more weight. Another thing, I would try to go back to working in the low post. We know your passing skills are great. We know your ball handling is great. But I would go back to working into the post because that would be some way that I could rest on the offensive end, or it would provide another weapon. If I surround myself with all these shooters, LeBron in the low post is dangerous. And he's also, you can be a playmaker from the low post. And then the third thing to be able to finish out my career, he's got to be able to shoot free throws better, because in those critical games, it's going to come down to him being able to make free throws, drawing fouls, and getting to that free throw line. So even LeBron James, one of the greatest basketball players ever, there's three things you need to do immediately. Now, it might be 5 pounds. It might be a couple percent of body weight. But as you get older, your body cannot take it. If you look at the greatest players that have ever played, what did they do late in the game? Kobe was different in his fifth championship. Tim Duncan was different. Not only the style of game, but his body weight was different for that fifth championship he got. Karl Malone, as he got older, he didn't get bigger. Man, he stayed in shape because Karl Malone could run. Man, he ran that court. That's one thing that Shaq, that's what robbed Shaq right. of some.
He went the other way with it. And Shaq got bigger instead of small.
I just have not seen players, all right? And regardless of what sport they play in, as they get older, you have to look that my ideal weight is not my ideal weight anymore. I'm 34, 35, 36. I need to be able to get down to something where I could function. That was something that really helped me, my training staff. We got down to 211 pounds when I had been in the league 16 years. All right, and that was the
idea. And
that
was down from where, see?
It was down from 215.
Okay, so
you know,
so
and I had played as high as 218. But at that point, it was time to drop down. And, man, I hadn't been that low since my first few years in the league. So your weight, the same way your first 5 years in the league, your weight's going to be totally different than in your prime of your career. But at the back end, man, help your body out. Help your joints out.
The free throw part, that's guaranteed. I mean, you shouldn't even have to say that. We consider him the best player in the league. You got to make free throws. I don't think at this point in his career you can get that. If you ain't got it in all those big games you done played in, I don't think that's going to get better. I just think that's just him, folks. You can't practice on that. You got to just lock in
at the
free throw line.
Because he don't have a good routine. He's not comfortable at the free throw line.
It's too late to change it now, though.
Well, we're in the end of it. How you get better, man? Everyone's trying. Either you're getting better or you're getting worse.
Right.
So if he doesn't do that, and I believe that would be I don't think LeBron is that way. When LeBron looks at his game, if you look at the weakest part of his game, right now is free throw shooting. So what good does it do to draw all these fouls and go to the hole if I'm not going to be able to knock it
no
down?
No question.
I watched Joel Embiid last night.
Knock him down.
7-21.
7-2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Knock down 20 in a row.
Yep. But we're in the league now where you got shooting fours getting hack a shack. Roberson and OKC, they was hack a shack. So it's a different league now.
Right.
The other aspect of this is things that are not in his control as far as will he win a title. You guys talked about things he can control, his body weight, working on his free throws, things such as that. I thought you might mention different ways to approach the young players, but I guess we don't even know if those young players
will be
on the team if they make the trade for Anthony Davis.
That window's passed to do that.
What?
That window's passed.
That's gone.
To help the young guy, that's passed.
So, listen, you're pals with Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant thinks I always talk negative about him. Gave Chris and Jenna the stink eye at a Knicks game because I talk negative about him. I'm going to say something very nice about Kevin Durant here. Kevin Durant right
yourself.
Now.
Don't hurt yourself.
Kevin Durant right now has as much power over the league as any player has ever had going into an offseason. Mm-hmm. And it's, if he stays in Golden State, then this question might be a moot point. If he stays in Golden State, LeBron plus Anthony Davis, I don't think that's enough. Mm. You would need to hit a grand slam home run this offseason. Kyrie and Anthony Davis, and then maybe you can be the second favorite to win the title. But if KD leaves and comes here, we got 10 teams that go into next year thinking we can win the title.
Right.
That the Vegas odds will be as stacked as they have been since the NBA, Jordan's first year of retirement, mm-hmm. when there was 8-9 teams that legitimately felt they could win a championship. And it would get back to the era of basketball when you first came in, where to be a title contender, you needed two great players yes. and a good supporting cast. Like, that's what KD has the power to influence if he makes the move to New York City.
I agree, but we talk about LeBron. I ain't really worried about KD. LeBron, for the most part, don't, like you say, okay, free throws, that's one thing. You can work on your game. But as far as the way he approaches every season, I don't think anybody does it better. You know, he locks in the summertime, he come back. Like, if they would have made that trade, we wouldn't be talking about none of this stuff.
No, I would still be talking about it. Because you'd be like, hey, man, what can LeBron do down the stretch? I'd be like, man, I'm concerned about his weight. I'm concerned about the amount of force on his joints. Oh, he's never been injured. Okay. Well, everyone's going to get injured at one point.
And, and see, to that point.
The free throw shooting, I've been on that forever, man.
Yeah.
Because I'm an MJ guy. Mm-hmm. And this game boils down to, at the end, I'm going to draw me a foul, and I'm going to go to the free throw line. It's the simplest form of basketball how I'm going to win. Call them free mm-hmm. for a reason. Mm-hmm. If you're a seven-footer, you got ginormous hands, I'm willing to make some concessions for you.
Yeah.
But, man, when you're 6'8", and your viability, we talking about who's the greatest player in the world, and one guy shoots 80%, one guy shoots 70%, stop, man.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real thing.
Just real quick, on your weight point, it's something LeBron's done in his career as far as depending on the type of style he wants to play. We saw going into year two in Miami, when he was going to make the commitment to go into the low post, he came in bigger than any point in his career. We saw him his first year back in Cleveland, he slimmed down a lot. So he has shown the ability to change weights, and if you're right that he needs to get back to around the weight when he came into the league.
Let's just say this. We saw him get hurt at this weight.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Well, let's just say, well, what's the right weight? This weight or get heavier or lose weight, what Chris said?
Definitely not get heavier.
Okay, then. Well, definitely let's just use some common sense. As you start to get older, your body cannot take the impact on your joints. He is human, just like everyone else. Look at any cross sport. Look at the elite of the elite and look at them and see what size they are, what weight they're at. Tom Brady, huh? What weight y'all think he's at right now in physical shape he's in? He's a lot lighter than he ever was. Well, he's younger, too. He's got a fountain of youth going there. But this is what has happened in all sports. LeBron James, and I tell, just like I tell kids, like, Coach, what do I need to do to get better? And I say, are you going to listen to me? He said, yes. Well, I would never tell you to do something that you couldn't do. LeBron James can do this. That's why I would say that, because he has done it. When in Miami, he went to riding his bike. He got leaner. There are other times where he balked up because of the style. He is capable of doing it. If he wants to be the greatest player ever, he's going to have to win another championship, and he's going to have to come up with a different style to be able to finish off his career.
All right, Steven, see you a little bit later on in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up, could Le'Veon Bell's best football still be
next
ahead of him?
Next show you on, you can say that.
Don't have to
I let you go, but you're still wrong.
Back here, first things first. So last season, Trent Brown was the starting left tackle for the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. This offseason, he signed a 4-year deal, making him the highest paid offensive lineman in the league. Trent Brown joins us now. Trent, good morning. Thanks
good
for
to
being
see you.
With
Thanks
us.
How are you?
Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank
good
you.
Morning.
Well, it's such a – first of all, it's great to have you here. You're, as I mentioned before, definitely the biggest guest, but you're the soft giant sitting here. You're so quiet and sort of understated, and it goes along with your story. Seventh-round pick to become then the highest offensive lineman in NFL history. How much does that mean to you?
It means a lot. It took a lot for me to get here. Didn't take it for granted. The opportunity was definitely open, granted with open arms. And here we are.
Where we were just 10 months ago was a very different place. The commentary, mm-hmm. to be fair, you were, in my mind, one of the biggest question marks for the Patriots. Solder leaves. Isaiah Wynn, who they draft, pops his Achilles. And it was a relatively unknown player. Seventh-round pick, played in San Francisco. Trent Brown is going to be protecting Tom Brady's blind side. How much of that conversation were you aware of? And why do you think you were able to thrive so I would say almost instantly once the season got going?
I just think it was a part of going to an organization that fully believed in you. Confidence was through the roof, and I was able to play my game. We did things that were played into my strengths.
What were those things? What do you mean by that?
Just how we prepared the run game and the pass protection.
In fact, I think earlier in the season, they relied more on a quick passing game, allowing you to get very, very comfortable. Also, they didn't give you a lot of help. A guy that's young, a late-round draft pick thrown in the trade with Jimmy Garoppolo, typically you would think that the tight end, they would go left side and the tight end would be next to you. No, that's not what New England did. They put you on that island and you earned your keep. But as the season went on, it seems like that they thought that you might be a better run blocker, and then you guys just started leaning on people and mashing people. Did you see your confidence once you started the season, playing in that system, gain momentum as the season went on?
Most definitely. And I feel like we started clicking on all cylinders at the right time as a whole group, the whole line that we did.
Well, and go ahead, Jenna.
Is there pressure on a New England Patriot offensive lineman to make sure nothing ever happens to Tom Brady? I mean, you hear all these stories that this organization goes through this quarterback. How much pressure is on that line?
I don't think it's any pressure at all. I mean, whoever's back there, you want to do your best to keep him upright.
In the playoff run, what was so remarkable was the number of dropbacks Brady had without getting hit. He was sacked going into the Super Bowl, I think, one time. You guys playing some very good pass rushers. The Chiefs didn't have a highly ranked defense. One thing they did well was get to the quarterback. How much of that was schematics, Scarnecchia, and in Josh McDaniels' game plan, and how much of that was you guys just going out there and executing?
It was all a combination of all those things. Everybody was prepared. Everybody was well prepared and ready to go.
Now, let's go from a – because everyone wants to know about Tom Brady. Man, we can't have you here unless we talk a few questions about Tom Brady. Because we have some other people questioning other leadership. We have known Tom Brady to be one of the great leaders in the NFL. Mm-hmm. How was his leadership? And give me some examples of things, how Tom endeared himself to his teammates.
It's only – one example to give. I mean, he's just led by example day in and day out. How he approached the day, how he would approach practice.
Do you ever remember getting to the office before Tom Brady?
No.
Did you ever remember yourself being there long after Tom Brady was left the office? Unless there was an injury or something?
No.
So when you say lead by example every day, obviously that's not just on Sundays on the field. Mm-hmm. When you say lead by example in practice, what does that mean? For people that haven't been out there, explain to us what you mean by that.
I mean, he's just taking advantage of all time. Every rep counts for sure. And even between when we go from offensive period to defensive period, he's finding something to do, something to work on.
Tell me something you learned from Tom Brady that you'll take with you now to the Raiders, something that maybe you've never had another quarterback teach you in the way that he plays, the way he approaches the game.
Definitely just how he speaks life into in that huddle. He commands the huddle, and when you break the huddle, you're ready to play, for sure.
What type of excitement do you have? Because you made two transitions. You're in San Francisco. You're trying to cut your teeth there. You get your first opportunity. Man, then you're involved in a trade. You're going to New England. And I know you had to be scared, okay? Because people, young players think that it's the evil empire. And then you get there and been like, wow, this is okay. Now you're in Oakland. You heard John Gruden's voice and the enthusiasm that they – how much are you looking forward to playing in that Oakland? And now, man, you're not just a part of it, man. You're a main attraction. Every week people are going to be interviewing. Are you ready for that type of attention?
Yes, sir. Definitely ready to play for Coach Gruden. Full of energy. Breathes life into the team for sure. Can't wait to get started. I haven't received much attention, but I'm a pretty poised guy, and I think I'm made for it.
For you, what was your reaction with the Antonio Brown part of this, as him coming over to the Oakland Raiders and being a part of you become the big free agent acquisition, he is the big trade acquisition, and an offense that could be very different than the one that was there last year?
We kind of grew close to each other. We got the same agent about a year ago. We were at a workout at Bomberito's down in Miami, and I was just finished with my second workout, and he was probably starting his ninth or tenth of the day, who knows with him. But it definitely played a role, some excitement there. Definitely a playmaker, a guy that you would definitely be wanting to get the ball to. So
you mentioned, sorry, just real quick, Antonio's ninth or tenth. It seems like even amongst hardworking athletes, his workout regimen is legendary. Mm-hmm. That amongst even of the elite of the elite, there is something about how and how often and the way in which he works out that is special. Knowing him now for a year plus, having worked out with him, can you illuminate that a little bit?
I mean, you see it every day on social media. Like, he lets you guys see it.
It's real.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the facility they work out down there in Florida, they get it done. They've been doing it. Parmalito's been doing it and doing it at a high level. Do you think that right now, because Oakland, you know, not a lot of positive attention coming out of Oakland, how do you look as far as getting everything positive as far as the silver and black and the role that you're going to play trying to bring winning football back to Oakland?
I think I just play my game and do what I do, not try to do more than or play outside of myself. Just do what got me here.
I've got a non-football question for you because your story, people, I think fans think everyone plays in the NFL is rich for life. Seventh-round pick. Your salary at the time's public. That is not, it's a nice living, but it's not, I'm going to retire after a few years. It's nothing close to it. Last year, I think you made the most you'd ever made in your career is $2 million. Again, that's a lot of money, but you're 24 years old. You got another 60 plus years ahead of you. For you now to be in this position outside of football financially, what it allows you to do, the freedom, the lack of stress, that part of your life now being removed, or whether it's things you can do for the people you love, have you had a moment to reflect on all this work has led now to this moment for me off the field and what it opens up for the rest of my life?
I definitely appreciate the humble beginnings, appreciate the security that I have now. And I'm trying to go get another one, honestly.
Absolutely.
It's just the beginning.
Yeah, that's what I always tell the young kids. Man, if you're under the age of 25 and they're giving you a bunch of money, man, this is just the beginning. You need to go get you another $60 million. Yes, so good luck to you, man.
Yes, sir.
Glad you came on the show. Looking forward to watching your career blossom.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What are you looking forward to more, Oakland or maybe a little Vegas? Because the necklace says Vegas, but the demeanor says Oakland.
I'm excited to play in the Black Hole.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.